The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. This week, the decision we've been waiting for, the Dobbs decision. Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey are overruled. We'll go to Mississippi and Governor Tate Reeves, where the Dobbs challenge to Roe started.
It is about continuing to create a culture of life.
How did we get here?
President Trump transformed the 5-4 John Roberts Court to the 5-4 Clarence Thomas Court.
Amidst a global economic crisis, President Biden joins the leaders of the G7 meetings in Germany. Stephen Moore was not impressed.
This idea that somehow they're going to change the temperature of the planet when these idiots can't do anything right.
And Turkey removes their objections to the efforts of Finland and Sweden to join NATO.
It's a massive development that will bolster NATO's effectiveness.
All this and more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand, 24-7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. We will begin with the Supreme Court. It is pretty difficult to overstate the significance of the decisions coming out this term from the conservative majority on the Supreme Court. Carson v. Macon made it clear that the state simply cannot discriminate against a school because it is religious. Coming out of Washington State, the high school football coach, Mr. Kennedy, had his free exercise rights restored. The Bruin decision was an enormous win for the Second Amendment. And there's more. But the decision that so many have been waiting for and working for almost 50 years came out of Mississippi in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization. After nearly 50 years, the court held, and I quote, "The Constitution does not confer a right to abortion. Roe and Casey are overruled, and the authority to regulate abortion is returned to the people and their elected representatives." Full stop, end quote. I turned to the governor of the state where the court challenge to Roe and Casey began, Governor Tate Reeves of Mississippi. Governor, all eyes are on Mississippi because of the Dobbs case. Tell us about how Dobbs came to be and then what happened after the court in the course of deciding Mississippi's 15-week ban on abortions actually threw out Roe v. Wade and Casey, and therefore a trigger law went into effect. What's the state of the law in Mississippi today?
Well, the state of the law today is that we had a trigger law that passed the Mississippi legislature back in 2007. And it's really an interesting story because in 2007, we actually had a Democrat Speaker of the House and a Democrat Chairman of the Public Health Committee in the House of Representatives. Just kind of speaks to, when you listen to the rhetoric on the other side these days, how far the Democrat Party has moved to the left on this issue. But our trigger law says that once and if Roe v. Wade is overturned, that our Attorney General then has the responsibility to certify that fact. And then 10 days later, our trigger law will go into effect, which outlaws abortions in all cases with the exception of rape and the life of the mother. Now, the Jackson Women's Health Organization, the exact same one that we were fighting with in Dobbs, filed a suit in state court on Monday afternoon after our Attorney General made that certification. And so we've got a court battle to deal with in the state courts, but ultimately that will get to the Mississippi Supreme Court, and I'm confident that the court will, in fact, just as the U.S. Supreme Court said, there is no guaranteed right to an abortion in the U.S. Constitution. There is no guaranteed right to an abortion in the Mississippi Constitution. And that trigger law hopefully will go into effect approximately 7 days from today.
So, Governor, tell us a little bit about the specifics. Rape, is the incest included in the exceptions to the ban on abortion?
Incest does not currently included in the ban in the bill that passed in 2007. As you know, in many instances, incest is a very small number of the total cases. And in many of those instances where incest is involved, it's oftentimes an adult and a minor child that would actually be considered rape itself. So that's a conversation that we're going to continue to have in Mississippi and see if there are any other exceptions that should or need to be made. But at this time, no, it is not.
Now, is there any intention on the part of Mississippi to ban contraception, as some of the left have said, is on the table after Dobbs? That's absurd, by the way. I teach constitutional law, and that is not, in fact, on the table, made expressly so by Justice Alito and in the concurrence by Justice Kavanaugh. Justice Thomas would like to revisit substantive due process, but that ain't happening. And so my question to you is there any move to legislate any ban on contraception, IUD specifically, or the morning after pill?
Let me just be clear. In Mississippi, we have no intention to restrict access to contraceptives. That is not a conversation that we are having, nor is it a conversation that we intend to have. In fact, the next phase of the pro-life movement is not about banning contraceptives, but it is about continuing to create a culture of life, to provide for that expected mother, to make sure that we are providing resources for every child and doing everything in our power for those babies that perhaps are not wanted for whatever reason, that we find those babies a forever home. And for those of us that go to church every Sunday morning, and that's a vast majority of Mississippians, we have a challenge, and that's one of the things that we have to work together as a faith community to give back. And to me, that's the next phase of the pro-life movement, and that's where we are focused.
Would you ever support any attempt to criminalize a woman for having to make it her the subject of criminal prosecution if she secures an abortion illegally in the state?
Well, that's certainly, we have no intention to do that. You know, the way in which our laws work is because we have now made abortion illegal, we have a state medical licensure board. And that state medical licensure board ensures that the thousands and thousands of physicians in our state follow our state laws and follow acceptable medical practices in the practice of medicine. If you choose not to do that, then you lose your medical license. And that is the way in which we in our state plan to monitor this and ensure that our laws are followed. It's through the medical licensing process.
Would you support efforts to protect young women who find themselves pregnant and under Mississippi law obliged to carry to term?
Well, there's no question that we must not only protect those women, we have to make sure that we are building an infrastructure wherein we can provide the resources that they need. And that's one of the things that I'm most proud of that Mississippi has done in our effort to create that culture of life. And my message to women that find themselves in that position, because I know it can be very difficult, but my message to those individuals is, you know what? There are people who love you. There are people who love that mom. There are people in this state and across this country who love that unborn baby. And it's our responsibility as a faith community to step up and be there for those individuals in their difficult times of need.
The credit for the overturning of Roe goes out to politicians and activists and others who have worked relentlessly and prayed fervently for the cause of life for nearly a half century. But practically speaking, on June the 24th of 2022, how was it that we got to this point? Charlie Kirk turned to Mike Davis, who worked as chief counsel for nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
10 years ago, Justice Scalia was lamenting that the court had gone off the rails. What happened in a decade where we went from a court that was insane and dominated by Sotomayor and Kagan and upheld Obamacare as merely a tax, even though we know simply that that was an insane decision, where 10 years later, we now have restored constitutional sanity? What do you attribute this success to?
I attributed this success to President Donald J. Trump and Senate Republicans. President Trump in 2016 won an upset victory against Hillary Clinton in big part because he promised he would appoint constitutionalist Supreme Court justices and federal judges who would follow the law instead of rewrite the law. And what we saw with this Dobbs decision coming out was the culmination of that. It was because President Trump transformed the 5-4 John Roberts Court to the 5-4 Clarence Thomas Court with the appointments of Justices Gorsuch, my former boss, Justice Kavanaugh, who I helped lead through the Senate confirmation, and then Justice Amy Coney Barrett. So It is a fundamental transformation of the federal judiciary back to its constitutionalist origins, what it's supposed to be before the liberals hijacked the Supreme Court nearly 90 years ago.
So they're calling this court illegitimate, which basically is them saying, we don't like how they rule, therefore we're going to try to undermine everything they're doing. So without going too deep into this, just what are your immediate thoughts at the continued smear and character assassination of the brilliant Clarence Thomas?
It's a radical assault on judicial independence. They hate Clarence Thomas because he is a conservative black man who escaped the Democrats' plantation long, long, long ago. They're even attacking his wife, Jenny, who's been a lifelong political activist, and she never worked in the Democrats' kitchen. She's always been a conservative. And so I think Clarence Thomas and Jenny Thomas should tell these Democrats to go to hell.
I think they do in their own way, but it's just the character assassination and the smear is so revealing of the American left and of the Democrat Party. So let's talk about impeachment. This is something that is now being talked more and more. AOC calling, saying Kavanaugh, Barrett, and Thomas committed impeachable offenses. Is there any hope that they will remove Supreme Court justices with impeachment? Has this ever happened before in American history? Walk us through that.
Only in America could someone like AOC go from cocktail waitress to fake constitutional scholar in less than a decade. No, there is zero basis for any of these arguments for Justice Clarence Thomas's impeachment, for Justice Kavanaugh's impeachment, Justice Gorsuch's impeachment. This is a radical assault on judicial independence. It goes back to the fact that FDR nearly 90 years ago and the switch in time that changed nine, he cowed the Supreme Court, got them to change their jurisprudence and gave the federal government unlimited powers, essentially. And so 90 years later, nearly 90 years later, President Trump transformed the Supreme Court. The left loved the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary when they controlled it.
Yes.
They've lost control now, and so they want to destroy it.
There's an accusation that is kind of being floated that these justices lied under oath, which is basically when they were going through the process that the justices were misleading to senators and other people. I'll find the clip, but first, what's your response to that, Mike?
It's nonsense. I ran Justice Gorsuch's confirmation as his former law clerk from the outside. I was the Senate staff leader for Justice Kavanaugh's confirmation. I worked on the Chief Justice and Justice Alito's confirmation from the Bush 43 White House. I had a supporting role for Justice Barrett's confirmation from the Article III Project. These Supreme Court nominees, they're federal judges, they're bound by the judicial canons, and they all answer this the same way, whether they're Democrat appointed or Republican appointed, which is they will follow precedent. If Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh somehow lied by doing that, then that means that Justice Kagan and Justice Sotomayor lied when they said that they would uphold precedent on Heller and the Second Amendment. It's just political noise and political nonsense from liberals, whether it's Chuck Schumer or Senator Susan Collins, the Republican liberal from Maine who is losing her mind.
Coming up, the president goes to Germany for the meeting of the G7.
This idea that somehow they're going to change the temperature of the planet when these idiots can't do anything right.
Stephen Moore, when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
As the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy enters our 25th anniversary year, we've remained committed to a single truth of world history, that ideas have consequences. To understand these ideas and their impact on today's politics, and to test them quantitatively, requires the unique curriculum we offer on our Malibu, California campus. Apply now for fall classes at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. President Biden this past week was in Europe, beginning in Germany for a meeting of the G7. They met, of course, amidst an economic crisis that reaches and spans the globe. Inflation and skyrocketing gas prices are on the minds of Americans as we enter the holiday weekend. Families are forced to consider whether or not they can press ahead with their vacation plan. Veteran economist Stephen Moore is not impressed. He joined Chris DeGaulle on AM 990 The Answer in Philadelphia.
How do they stand in Germany yesterday? and talk about renewable energies when Germany is literally so on the ropes they have to buy, they have to build coal plants. How do they do it?
Exactly. These people are so deranged and delusional. These are the leaders of major countries in the world. Here we have a crisis in Ukraine. We've got a crisis with the global economy. We have inflation everywhere. And these idiots are talking about climate change and renewable energy when, as you just said very well, Chris, Germany and all these countries are actually using more coal than ever before because they're running out of energy because of this idiotic infatuation. Look, I mean, we all care about a clean environment, of course, and we want to make sure our planet is safe. But this idea that somehow they're going to change the temperature of the planet when these idiots can't do anything right, it's just laughable. And it's so frustrating to me. So I had the same impression that you did. There's no optimism. There's no sense of here's what we're going to do for victory. I don't even know if they want to, win in Ukraine. But they just look like a bunch of feckless leaders, and it's so demoralizing.
How about year over year, Steve Moore? In fact, your beautiful picture is shining amongst the Fox Business reporting of this story. J.P. Morgan's 2022 Business Leaders Outlook Pulse released yesterday. Only 19% of business leaders optimistic about the national economy for the year ahead. That was very different from just last year at this same time. 75% of those responding were optimistic for the economy looking forward. Just a year.
And that was and that's because, of course, the savior had just been elected, right? This person who's going to save the world economy, and Joe Biden save us from Trumpism. And boy, does Trumpism look good today compared to what we had what we have right now. I mean, it's extraordinarily frustrating. I don't find anybody with any backbone, and they're all involved in these kind of climate change discussions when the world is going to hell in a handbasket. And that story is true, by the way, that Germany is now using more coal than ever before. Gee, I thought these people were talking about, how they were going to reduce their carbon emissions, and they're vastly increasing it.
Other big news coming out of Washington this week is quite positive. Turkey announced that they were withdrawing their objections to Finland and Sweden joining NATO. I spoke about it with a regular on my program, Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher. Finland has 61,000 persons in its operational standing army and then a territorial force of 176,000 people. It's their reserve force. They have got 3 readiness brigades, 2 Jaeger brigades, 2 mechanized battle groups, 1 helicopter battalion. They've got lots of aircraft. And then Sweden has got the world's best submarines, not named the United States. What do you make of this development?
Well, I think it's a massive development that will bolster NATO's effectiveness. The early statements coming out of NATO leadership, and Mr. Stoltenberg said, on balance, it increases the number of troops we have in high readiness from 40,000 to 300,000. As you mentioned, the Swedes in particular bring a lot to the table, a very capable aircraft, very capable diesel electric subs. I think this is a net positive for the alliance. Anytime you have members that are already investing in their own defense, already bring lethal assets to the table, you're making NATO stronger. Finland has significant capabilities in the Arctic as well, which is where the alliance has been weak. And we obviously need to work on strengthening them for land and air threats. But I think with their icebreaker capability, that's going to help us up north. So on balance, this is a massive shift for the better. And I think the fact that they were able to work out an agreement with Turkey, if you remember, the initial concerns were from current NATO member Turkey relating to certain statements or positions that Sweden in particular had regarding Kurdish groups that the Turks consider to be terrorists. And my understanding is they ironed out those concerns, and both Finland and Sweden agreed in writing to not support rhetorically or otherwise any Kurdish groups that the Turks consider terrorists. So this is a big sea change for NATO. If you remember the last few months, we've heard a lot of talk. We've heard a lot of talk from the Germans in particular about changing and waking up from their complacency. Well, the proof will really be in the pudding, and this is one of the first major signs we've seen that NATO is indeed modernizing, could potentially be hardening, and I think it's a welcome development and long overdue.
The people, I think, and tell me if you agree with this, Congressman Mike Gallagher, who are most relieved are our Baltic friends, because the folks who are really strung out on NATO are Latvia and what's the third one? Estonia. And they are on the northern front, the northern edge, and they are really exposed to Russian aggression. They are that little enclave in there that is actually Russian. But now Sweden and Finland are obliged to come to their defense. So if Russia rolls into any of the Balts, not only do they have to worry about whatever we've got in Poland, Bulgaria, and Romania, they got to worry about Finland.
100%. And, you know, that's the whole goal. The deterrence is the name of the game. You avoid war by convincing the other guy that you are indeed willing to fight. We also have, I think, a lesson learned here in terms of our experience with the European Defense Initiative. You know, we have about $16 billion worth of assets stored in Europe. That, of course, is going to make the Russians think twice. You can fall in on divisions worth of gear. That's a lesson that is worth learning when it comes to the Indo-Pacific. We don't have anything of that scale in the Indo-Pacific. I actually got an amendment passed last week in the National Defense Authorization Act to start with a $1 billion Indo-Pacific fund that would fund a lot of the Indo-Pacific commanders' top priorities. We have an emerging Pacific Defense Initiative. But the point is, you can't be trying to figure this out after the war has already begun. We are seeing how quickly stockpiles are depleted right now in Ukraine. And so the lesson for all of us is that we have to begin the buildup prior to the outbreak of conflict. And of course, paradoxically, this gives us the best chance of avoiding conflict altogether. But my feeling is we are not moving with a sense of rapidity that we need.
So, Congressman, my next question is, should NATO become NAPTO, meaning the North Atlantic Pacific Treaty Alliance? Because Australia, Japan, South Korea, and perhaps India might be willing to join the NAPTO.
Well, I'm not sure India would be there anytime soon. I think, you know, if there's one country you highlight as us having to expand our relationship, deepen our ties in order to counter a rising China over the long term, it is India, but they are firmly in the partner category and not the ally category. And, of course, there are some key issues that we still need to work through, namely their continued purchasing of Russian weapon system. The fact is, we do have formal treaty allies in the Indo-Pacific. So as a starting point, we should expand upon that and make sure that we're working together to field the requisite weapon system that will make the Chinese military think twice.
Coming up, Dennis Prager reflects on the Dobbs decision.
For on the left, you cannot tell a woman you are wrong. You can tell and must tell men they are wrong constantly. But the idea that a woman can be morally wrong is vile to folks on the left.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment, stay with us.
The fight for the unborn is raging in our country. An unprecedented leak from the Supreme Court indicates that Roe v. Wade is on the brink of being overturned. The debates have never been stronger. The award-winning film, The Matter of Life, cuts through the rhetoric and hatred and exposes the real issues surrounding the plight of the unborn. The Matter of Life. Stream it today at salemnow.com and have your own life transformed as you watch The Matter of Life.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. When the Dobbs decision was released on Friday last week, it sparked demonstrations and doomsday rhetoric from pro-abortion forces. We've also seen crisis pregnancy centers across the country vandalized. And the accepted position among abortion defenders is, by and large, unrestricted abortion right up to the point of birth. Here's my friend, Dennis Prager.
What is the motive behind the passion to unrestricted allowance in our society of taking the life of a baby, a viable baby? Therefore, I am even leaving aside those months wherein it is not viable on its own, the baby. Okay? I'm taking the extreme nature of their position that no one can deny, So they'll say at the beginning it is not a fully human or not a human. I'm not going to even debate that issue, even though science says it's a human. Why the passion to allow the killing of a baby that was voluntarily produced? The vast majority of cases does not involve, correct, a rape. That's very important. So the woman got pregnant voluntarily. Now, she may have not wanted to get pregnant, but it was not forced upon her. She entered intercourse with a male voluntarily. So that is part of the answer, I think. For on the left, you cannot tell a woman you are wrong. You can tell and must tell men they are wrong constantly. But the idea that a woman can be morally wrong is vile to folks on the left. There is nothing higher than you and your desires in this matter. There is no morality higher than what you think is right for you. Moral is moral for you. That's what is at the heart of this issue. It is the radical secularization of society expressing itself. You are not bound to any moral code that you differ with, because all morality is personal opinion. That, my dear listeners, that is the fundamental issue here. There is finally a time that has occurred that says to the radically secularized and the radical notion of I determine what is right and wrong, society has no say. It has finally confronted that attitude. This is why the screams are so loud. For AOC, what she believes is right is right. The entire left has always felt that way on any issue that they hold. We are bound to no code. We are the authors of right and wrong. That's the issue at its heart. Given that it is incontrovertible that at a certain time of pregnancy, we have a full human being involved. That is undeniable. The idea that it is a worthless pimple until it's born is an absurdity. It is in the league of men give birth and defund the police. It's an absurdity. It's not a human till it's born. It's absurd. An atheist can understand it's absurd. There are atheists who do. That is the reason for the passion and the anger. Who the hell is society to tell me that there is a right and wrong beyond my wishes? It is a radical narcissism at the heart of the fanaticism of the right to kill a viable baby. I am not even addressing the first months, where it is incontrovertible you have a human being, is what I am addressing.
Coming up,
this ought to give conservatives some hope.
Tim Kingenstein of the Claremont Institute. When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
The fight for the unborn is raging in our country. An unprecedented leak from the Supreme Court indicates that Roe v. Wade is on the brink of being overturned. The debates have never been stronger. The award-winning film, The Matter of Life, cuts through the rhetoric and hatred and exposes the real issues surrounding the plight of the unborn. The Matter of Life. Stream it today at salemnow.com and have your own life transformed as you watch The Matter of Life. Watch it now at salemnow.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Conservatives have had very little to celebrate over the past couple of years. Political losses, cultural trends to the left have many feeling disheartened. If that's the case for you, these last 2 weeks ought to have served as a very pleasant surprise. Tom Klingenstein is a chairman of the board for the Claremont Institute. He joined Seth Leibson, my colleague on AM 960 The Patriot in Phoenix.
You know, there's been sort of a rather momentous rulings, not just Roe, but on religion and guns.
Right.
And this ought to give conservatives some hope. You know, for the last, I don't know how many years, conservatives have won almost nothing.
Right.
It feels to me like liberal victories have been piled up one after the other.
Yeah.
And now we have reason to hope. And so these decisions, I think, are even bigger. And the particular subjects that they cover, they ought to give conservatives some reason to think that perhaps we could turn back some of this. Now, the Supreme Court obviously can only turn back so much, right? But even so, it's made me, you know, a little more optimistic, and I think it should make other people a little more optimistic.
It should. And by the way, you should get some compliments on some of this too, Tom. How delighted were we all to read that when it came to a Florida District Court federal judge overruling the travel mask mandate, that judge was trained by an idea you had, which is that the Claremont Institute should be teaching these aspiring judges how to think about the Constitution and the founding. And boy, she was one of ours. She was one of yours. So well done on that. Tom, on your phraseology that I like so much, woke comms, short for woke communists, let's look at how closely the communist ethos does run through our political opposition. Almost at every intellectual and practical level does it. I mean, my favorite hashtag is, a friend of mine sent me a t-shirt, hashtag MOFA, make Orwell fiction again. And, you know, you think about what the woke mob has brought us with the destruction and change of language. Speech is violence. Violence is mostly peaceful. Peacefully marching is insurrection. Gender changing is gender affirming. Colorblindness is racism. Discrimination is anti-racism. You get the point. I mean, this is right out of 1984, or really any regime in what used to be the Soviet Union or is in current China.
We've got. See, if you're in a totalitarian regime, you have to change the way people think about things.
Right.
How they understand themselves in the world.
Right.
And we do that significantly through language.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to change the language. And you have to shut down people who are speaking some other truth. I mean, this may be a little off, Seth, but, you know, you can. The other side's got to get rid of homeschooling. Why? Because it provides an opportunity for parents to speak a different language,
mm-hmm.
right, to express different ideas. And those kind of sources of heterodox ideas have to be plugged in the same way we have to use the police state, right,
mm-hmm.
to enforce the approved ideology.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you look, if you compared, read some stuff on totalitarianism. I think Rod Dreher's book, Live Not by Lies, is a very good book,
mm-hmm.
where he tries to explain totalitarianism and how so much of modern-day life or modern liberal life conforms. Obviously, Solzhenitsyn is, you know, probably the best guide. But think about totalitarianism. It's police state. It's censorship. The narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our narrative as America is systemically racist. The scapegoat. All totalitarian regimes have a scapegoat. They might be the Jews. In this case, they're the white males.
Mm-hmm.
So think about all the elements of a totalitarian regime, controlling the media, obviously, is a big one. Think about all those elements and try to translate them to what you're seeing today. I think that's very important. And
the lines are easily drawn. Let's add forced confessions, or at least implied forced confessions, and then we can reference Vaclav Havel's 1978 essay on the power of the powerlessness, that great description he has of why the greengrocer puts the workers of the world unite sign in his window, not because he believes it, but because he has to do it, right? We have that, too.
Well, the other thing, Stan, of totalitarian regimes, I think it's the Heart of Darkness that talks about this, is, you know, people confessing the crimes they didn't commit.
Also that, yes. Yes, we are just stacking,
We see that, you know, they find something that you wrote 20 years ago that's politically incorrect. At the end of the day, you apologize for something that you didn't really do. And even worse, you apologize and it doesn't help you, right? It fires up the mob.
Oh, by the way, that is the magic of Ron DeSantis. No retreat, baby, no surrender, right? I mean, that's what he has shown. Don't apologize.
You know, I just filmed a speech called The Virtues of Trump. And the point of it was, let's not throw away Trump right now. Trump had unbelievable courage and unmitigated patriotism and such distrust of experts. He was a bona fide outsider. Forget all the great policy stuff, which he did. But it's the rest of him is important. And you don't know the courage it takes to withstand the kind of gales and relentless abuse that he was subject to unless you yourself were in the eye of the storm. So the question to me for DeSantis, and I'm encouraged, but I think the jury's still out, does he have that kind of courage on a national scale? And we'll see. I think probably like you, to me it's Trump or DeSantis. I don't see anybody else close.
100%. But he and DeSantis have both shown that if you know what you're doing, or at least know what you're talking about and have the truth on your side, a lot of Republicans today and in times past, you know, they would cower in front of a university professor or a journalist.
Right. But I think to fight and punch back, you first have to understand that you're in a war.
Right.
You know, Trump, as I've often said, was just the person for our times, our circumstances. One could argue that Trump has set the table.
Yep.
He's shown us what the issues are. Mm-hmm. He didn't cause any divide in this country. He exposed the divide.
Right.
So Trump has done a lot, right? And the question is he the best one to take the next step? I don't think DeSantis would have done anything as well as Trump did last time around. But this time around, you know, I think there's a strong case to be made.
Coming up.
And here they are. They're going to promote democracy, they say, by limiting free speech.
More with Tom Klingenstein in the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Georgine Rice. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Finally, the words so many of us have been waiting to hear from the Supreme Court: the Constitution does not confer a right to abortion. Roe and Casey are overruled. We'll hear from Abby Johnson.
We have more states that will ban abortion and make it illegal than we have states making it legal.
Ryan Anderson points us to the priorities in the days ahead.
We need to bear witness to the truth that every human being is made in the image and likeness of God.
We'll look at the significance of the current conservative majority on the Supreme Court, including the win of Coach Kennedy in Washington, who simply wanted to pray.
This is the most significant term of the Supreme Court in our recent lifetimes.
Be sure to join us and visit our website at christianoutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The left-right divide has been a feature of the American political environment for my entire adult life. But over the course of the past 2 years, there has been a shift in where the energy is. It's on the hard left. We see it in Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and the Squad in Congress. And we saw it in the violent unrest in 2020. Let's pick up with a few more minutes of Tom Klingenstein with Seth Leibson. as they look at the key antidote to the education scheme of the left.
The campaign on homeschooling. It's an interesting thing. Yes, we can read Rod Dreher and we can read Vaclav Havel and we can read George Orwell and Solzhenitsyn. I'm encouraging people to read Chapter 2 of the Communist Manifesto. I mean, it is right there where you see Karl Marx talking about the importance of vanishing the American family through the use of social education. I mean, for those who were watching the BLM riots and saw on their agenda the call to dismember and disrupt the American family, for those that had read the Communist Manifesto, we understood it. No surprise that the founders of that movement claimed to be trained Marxists, right? I mean, these are woke comms because they are communists, Tom. There's no short-circuiting that fact.
In fact, you know, Seth, that points to an advantage of the riot. It allowed us to see where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the most important guidepost is one you just mentioned. In the BLM mission statement was a specific call to disrupt
yep.
the nuclear family.
Right.
Now, that was a little too much for the American public, so they took it out. But just because they took it out doesn't mean that they still want to go there, defunding the police. Well, that was a little bit too much.
Right.
It shows us where they're going. Or, you know, this, what do they call this, in the Department of Homeland Security's, this disinformation
campaign. Yeah, they're the Disinformation Bureau. Right, right.
And here they are. They're going to promote democracy, they say, by limiting free speech.
Yeah.
Well, now, that's another example. They've gone a little ahead of themselves, yeah. right? They now say they have to pause.
Yeah.
But don't think they aren't going to come back to it. The time is, you know, not right now, but it will be the time. So you want to be looking for all these telltale signs.
Tells, yeah. No, these are tells. They are exactly right, Tom Klingenstein. Exactly right. What a treat and what a delight. AmericanMind.org, if you want to read his piece, The Appeal of Ron DeSantis. And let's start the new phraseology on this show, Woke Comms. He did it in print. We're doing it on air. Woke Comms. Tom Klingenstein, bless you, sir. Godspeed.
Thanks for joining us for Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. For Seth's complete conversation with Tom Klingenstein, go to townhallreview.com. While you're there, sign up for our podcast. Let me wish you all the best on this 4th of July weekend. Enjoy the celebration of freedom. Enjoy the time with your family. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers David Bouchon, Jacob Orduña, Michael Cook, Tim Gantner, Adam Ramsey, and of course, Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.